Welcome, everybody, to Squib Load Podcast. I'm Sean.
I'm Case.
You can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Audio Boom. And we got a special topic for everybody today.
Big cool one.
Big cool one. We're talking about the White Death. Probably tell from the thumbnail and the title of this video, but we're going to be doing a special episode on the famous Finnish sniper, Simo Heia. And I'm going to pronounce his name Heia. Some people say, like, you know, Hawa, and they pronounce his names all sort of different ways, right? Doesn't matter how his name's pronounced. I think he's just a super cool guy.
And I'm going to call him Simo.
Simo? Let's call him Simo. I think that's better for everybody. In case, real quick before we get into this, we might sound a little bit different.
Yeah, we got some new microphones, you know?
Some new microphones. Shout out to our awesome fan who we can't name by name, but he was like, you guys don't sound too good.
And Donald Trump. Sorry, I didn't want to.
The big Donald. You know,
well, Case he's and just I are a big fan. Fans he's of a the fan big of the Donald. Pod, so we're going to I'm gonna shout him out. But I'm not.
Do you know anyone who can do a good Donald Trump impression?
Well, let me tell you.
We've got Case here. He's a total loser.
I'm the best. I'm the best at everything.
Case is the best. He knows about guns.
Simo was a good sniper, but I'm better.
Some people are even saying I'm better at sniping than Simo.
Oh, there you go. That's pretty good.
That's okay.
Yeah, I like that. But now, one big thing is we like telling these stories. Yeah. And all that stuff. Uh-huh. And do you think all the episodes wherever we tell like one big one do really well? I think they do. People seem to tell me that they really like them.
People the Hollywood like shootout. The special episodes. And honestly, I look at our analytics and stuff, and I think we get more listens when our thumbnail and our title is catchy.
Yeah.
I don't really know if it has much to do with the
girls
content.
Just want to have gun.
Yeah, girls just want to have guns. But like, it depends. Like, if I come up with a good title, or I'm sorry, if our editor comes up with a good title or like puts a good thumbnail on there. That it turns out pretty well.
We get our editor's crazy. He costs so much.
We do pay him a pretty good wage, so yeah. We're not making any money off of
people
this.
People ask what me and Sean do. Ask what our editor does. Fucker does nothing. Our he gets paid thousands.
He's in the other room right now. He's sweating and not wearing anything except underwear, and he is slaving away editing these podcasts.
Yeah, because it's editing night. He's scared. He's got another one to make.
Sunday night for our editor is a rough fucking day.
Yeah, we got about 500 of these backed up because of our editor.
Yeah, we're actually recording this in like April of 2004. So
yeah. So we just got
a little bit behind in our times, but okay. Let's talk about Simo. So people who saw the thumbnail, saw the title of this. Who is the White Death? I'll do a brief summary, and then I'm going to go over his life, and then we're going to talk about why he's important, and maybe answer some questions about who he is, what tactics he used, and why we like him, right? But Simo Heia was the most lethal sniper in military history. He was the deadliest with a rifle of anybody who's ever existed. He killed the most enemy combatants in conflict, arguably the best marksman to ever live. And he was a Finnish guy who fought in the Winter War, which is kind of like a little sub-war of World War II. It was between Finland and the Soviet Union in the winter of 1939 to 1940. And we're going to talk about his life. So,
Case? He's killing us.
Killing you? Who?
The Soviets.
Yeah, so
they're our allies.
I'll talk about that briefly. I don't want to talk too much about the actual Winter War because it's not super relevant to Simo individually and his sniping stuff. But just as a brief overview, in 1939, the Soviet Union was not involved in World War II in the way that we like imagine it.
Think of them now.
The Soviet Union was like not at war with Germany. They weren't on the Allies' side. In 1939, like. Britain and France were still fighting Germany, and the Soviet Union was like not really involved in that.
Like, they're just doing like side countries.
Yeah, they were doing their own little invasions of Europe. Like they were invading, like they invaded half of Poland in 1939, and then they invaded Finland. And they were just like, while the rest of Europe was distracted, kind of like invading little territories on their own.
They could be considered soft Nazis.
Yes,
not a full hard erect, a chub. Of a Nazi.
You're kind of right, though. They're like modern Russia in a way where they're just like, there are these old countries that used to be part of us. What if we just took them over, you know?
Dude, that used to belong to us. I know there's new things that started there, but maybe we should just... Ukraine.
Sure, they don't speak the same language and they have their own government and culture, but let's just steamroll over them and take them. So that's basically what the Winter War was. The Soviet Union invaded Finland and it was super not cool of the Soviet Union to invade. But then you got people like Simo who are part of the Finnish military and they were without... blowing them up too much without glazing, as Case would say.
Yes.
They were just professionals. They were really good at soldiering. And a lot of the Soviets at this time were, generally speaking, they were like really young farm boys who didn't have a lot of experience with fighting and warfare and strategy, you know? Whereas the guys in the Finnish army were trained professionals. I would compare them to like a modern special forces group with how well they were trained and how organized they were.
But I also think that this always happens with different militaries in different places. And Russia always seems to be very good at getting numbers, but not good at training.
Yeah.
It's like a known thing.
Yeah.
And then like, if you ever fucking go on a YouTube rabbit hole and you see all those videos where it's like Russian Spetsnaz special forces training, here's what they do. It's them like throwing an axe upside down and stuff. So they're just fucking retarded.
They're just doing stupid shit that doesn't matter. Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be fine.
Yeah. I see gun instructors doing like really stupid shit sometimes. Like we talked about that one Tim Kennedy thing where he went to that guy's shoot house and he was like, here's how to shoot sideways with one hand and a pistol. And it's like, why are you, what are you doing, man?
But it's just like a whole thing of Russians always are very good at conscripting lots of people.
Yeah.
But not good at training.
Yeah.
So that's why these Finnish were so much better, because they cared about the soldier.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And just broader, just like a broad view, Finland is like a really small country. Their population still to this day is a fraction of what modern day Russia's is.
Yeah.
And then think about the Soviet Union and how much bigger the Soviet Union was than modern day Russia is, and how many more people they had. It was so many. I think at the time the Soviet Union had around 200 million people. And then the Finnish, I don't know their exact numbers, but it had to be like at most like an eighth of that, probably even less. But they just had so few people compared to the Soviets. So to combat that, the Finnish was like, well, let's give our guys the best equipment we can possibly give them, and let's train our soldiers the best we can. And it's not like the Finns didn't know a war with Russia was possible. Think about like a modern day Ukraine, right? Where like all their military assets are based around how can we combat Russia, right? It's kind of difficult for us to imagine as the United States, because we don't have any enemies right next to us. But imagine you're living in a country like Finland or Ukraine, and then Russia is right next to you, and they're constantly threatening to invade you. Even if you don't think they will, it's just that threat is always there. So in the years leading up to the Winter War, I'm talking about like 1920s and 30s, the Finnish government really ramped up their military spending and their training. And you see the fruits of that in the Winter War and how well their soldiers did and how good their equipment was. We've mentioned this weapon in previous Squibload podcast episodes, but the Suomi 31 submachine gun was the primary submachine gun used by the Finnish military in World War II and the Winter War. And it is, I'm struggling to think of a submachine gun from that era that was better. Like, it may have been the best submachine gun of that time.
It
was chambered in 9x18 Makarov,
9mm.
The
greatest round ever, the Makarov!
The Makarov, which is a really interesting round. They also had, like, their main service rifle was the Mosin-Nagant, and very many variants of the Mosin-Nagant. And you might be thinking, oh, the Mosin sucks. Like, everybody knows the Mosin-Nagant rifle is like a cheap garbage rod. That's what it's called, right? Yeah. Okay, so the Finns, they were originally part of the Soviet Union and also the Russian Empire, right? So they had all the Russian Empire and Soviet Mosin-Nagants laying in their stockpiles. So then they took these rifles and like, how can we make this better? Like the special forces variant of this rifle. And so they only took the guns that were shooting sub 2 MOA. So at 100 yards, 2-inch groups from a rest.
Yeah.
Super accurate rifle. Like that's really accurate.
Yeah.
And then they said, well, these sights kind of suck and they're mass produced. So let's make them better for like real combat. Because if you think about the Mosin-Nagant 1891, the sights are like you can dial in the sights and, you know, re-zero them and stuff. And the sights are ridiculous on these guns.
Like they suck?
Well, they kind of suck, but then also like you can put the little like amplifier out to like 1,100 yards.
Oh, so you're never going to shoot that far.
You're never going to shoot that far. And then also the human eye can't even see past like what, 400 yards?
Yeah. Do you think a Mosin-Nagant would go 1,100 yards though?
Oh, the bullet will go that far.
It's just, there's no way to tell where it's going.
I mean, if you're taking a rifle that's like
made of wood,
5 MOA, which is the standard of that time. So 5-inch groups at 100 yards and then 1,000 yards. Now it's a 50-inch group.
Yeah.
And your eyes can't even see that far. And that's assuming you got a decently made rifle.
So it's just shooting fucking nothing.
You can't hit anything from that far. But that was how these rifles were mass produced, is like you could zero it for 1,100 yards. Because when the people making these guns in 1890, I mean, this is before World War I, this is before World War II. People didn't understand what warfare was going to be like when these guns were made, right? Designed, I should say. And the Soviets just kept it around because, I mean,
it's easy to produce.
It's easy to produce. It was really cheap. And if you have an army of like 10 million guys, it will arm them. You know, they have a rifle. But the Finns, who had all these rifles for free, improved on that. They gave them sights that you could adjust, but it was very limited. Like you could, they came out of the factory, sighted in for 150 meters, which is
pretty good.
That's like the perfect combat distance for like World War One and Two, I'd say.
If you're closer than that, you're hitting it. If it's farther,
you just aim up a little bit,
yeah,
and you're good to go. But like, think about like in World War II, when are you shooting stuff that's like past 200 yards? Like it's more uncommon.
Yeah.
It's more than likely you're going to be shooting at stuff that's closer, right? And especially in a country like Finland, where if you have the Soviet army invading, they're going to be in hills and trees and stuff and maybe across a lake, but that's very rarely going to be more than like 250, 300 yards away, right?
Uh-huh. So we've upgraded the Mosin Nagants for the Finnish.
And we also have that KP-31 Suomi submachine gun, which is excellent. Is
probably the best submachine gun of the time.
Yeah.
And a great caliper.
Yeah, yeah, and a great lethal caliber that's easy to make.
Yeah.
And then the Russians invade. Now let's talk about Simo a little bit. Mm-hmm. I've already stated he was the most lethal sniper in history. I'll fast forward just a tiny bit to his achievements and why you should care about Simo. So the number one thing is that we'll talk about like his kill count. I don't want to fix it on this too much, but it is like important to bring up. His most like referenced number for the amount of soldiers he killed in the Winter War was a 505. There's a squib-load drink right there.
Squib drink! By the way, this is the drunk episode.
Yeah, we're doing the drunk episode. Case and I are already a few drinks in. Simo Heia killed 505 enemy soldiers in the Winter War. Now, that's a fuck ton, right? Like that's
a fucking high school graduating class.
That is so many. In a big area, that's a big graduating
class. Imagine everybody you graduate with high school and how many motherfuckers are getting pregnant now and what's going on.
Simo wiped them all out.
Yeah, back in 1939, whenever fucking people were way less populated. He took out like 5 high school classes back then.
Now, I just want to put this in some perspective. If you look at other snipers in history, like Chris Kyle or Vasily Zaitsev or any of those guys,
it's not the same.
It's so not the same, and here's why. So Chris Kyle, as an example, was shooting people from like 2000, I don't know the exact date, so don't quote me on this, but like...
Very far.
Super far away, but then like say like 2006, like 2010. So it was like 4 years of sniping on his tours and stuff, right? I don't know those numbers exactly, but it was a long time he was sniping.
Yeah.
And then even Vasily Zaitsev from like 1941 to 1945, this guy was sniping. So like 4 years in like a war where there's so many people to shoot at, World War II, right?
Yeah. It would just be fish in a barrel.
Kind of, yeah, yeah. Simo, all of his kills were done in about 90 days.
Yeah.
So if you do the math, how many people per day is he shooting?
He went crazy.
He went crazy. There were days where he killed 30 people.
Yeah.
In a 24-hour period. He would go out by himself into the wilderness and come back with like dozens of dog tags.
Yeah, he thought he was just hunting and cheating the tags.
Yeah. So I've kind of, you know, you guys got a good picture of how badass this guy is. Let's talk about where he grew up and who he is. Simo Heia was born in December 17th of 1905. So... by the time the Winter War rolled around, he was 34. Which in my opinion, yeah. What do you think about that case? What about being 34?
The fact that he's 34 and went to war and is the best. It's just, it's an old man's game.
It is, because I think being 30 in war is like the perfect age.
I mean, like where I am in my life right now, I am 27.
Yeah.
And like, if I was in a country, a state that was being invaded like he was, I would definitely fight for my land and what's going on in my life now.
Yeah.
He's 34. He has even more than me.
Yeah.
So this guy had the dog in him. Yeah. He's trying to protect that farm.
Yeah, he was. He's trying to protect his farm. So I think 34 is like a great age for this because your body still works. Unless you have like some weird injury or whatever, your body works well.
Yeah.
You're still mentally sharp, but then you've got experience. Like you're not like a little kid who doesn't know anything.
No,
like
you're wise. 20-year-old.
You're wise and you're experienced and you've got like a kind of a life behind you. In a lot of people's cases, they've already got like a family and kids and stuff. So you've got more to fight for. I think it's like the best age for being a professional soldier, especially if you've already been doing it for a while. So he was older than almost every single soldier he was fighting too.
Yeah.
Like a lot of these Russian conscripts were like Georgian or Ukrainian or from like Belarus. And they're like 20-year-old kids or 18-year-old kids, you know, and they stood no chance against him.
You're not even allowed to enlist at that age nowadays. If there's a war, you would be allowed to. But like right now, you can't enlist unless you're like over 28 or something.
Where?
Like in America, it depends on the branch, but like the oldest Marines take is like 27, 28.
The oldest Marines? Oh, I see.
Like to enlist.
I see what you're saying. Yeah. You have to be
so at least. So the fact that he was 34 and like enlisted, which means he's going to be in the military.
Yeah.
Like that is crazy old to be enlisting.
I'm glad you brought that up because I wanted to talk about that a little bit. So Finland is a country with compulsory military service. Uh-huh. For those who don't know, that basically means that when you hit a certain age, you have to go to boot camp and combat school and then like learn to be a soldier.
Oh, you're like forced.
Yeah, you have to. It's like the law of those countries is if you're a man with no health problems and then you turn 18, time to go to boot camp.
That's fine.
You don't even have to like do a career in the army or whatever. You just like, you have to be trained to be able to do it, right? Yeah. And there's a lot of these countries, if you look at what countries are doing it, they're countries like Finland and Ukraine who are
Korea bordered. Does it still.
Korea does it, yeah. But
South Korea, I think.
Yeah, but that's to my point. Like, it's countries that are bordered by like these really aggressive neighbors.
Who's a bordering South Korea that's aggressive? I can't think of anybody. I don't know why they do that. Maybe they're just being rude.
So Simo Heia joined the military at age 19 in 1925. And he was in the military for like 8 months and then got trained as a regular infantry soldier. But here's some interesting things. I'm skipping around a little bit, but let me talk about his childhood. But just know that he joins the military at 19. So he grew up on a farm that is in Karelia, Finland, which is like right on the border with the Soviet Union. It's like a big lake called the Ladoga Lake. And then right north of that, there's like a bunch of flat farmland. And that's where Simo was born and grew up, on his family's farm. Mm. So his hobbies as a young man, and by that I mean like his teenage years, he loved hunting, he loved skiing, and he was really good at farming. Like he was like knew what time to plant stuff, knew how to cultivate crops, and then he was super good at skiing and would do it for fun like on his holidays. But the thing he was super good at was hunting. Like he was great at hunting. I think the reason that a lot of these people are good at hunting is because sometimes if you have like a bad year, a bad harvest, to no fault of your own, that's the only way to get food, yeah. Right? There's no grocery store in 1920 in Finland. So if you don't go and hunt that caribou or that fox, your family's not eating tonight.
And also like being good at hunting, if you've done it your whole life, is something that's like a mastercraft. And when you're really good at it, you are the man. Like you could be getting so much food and providing for your neighbors and everybody whenever bad times happen. Everybody knows.
Yeah.
It's very important. Yeah. It's like, it's not a forgotten craft. It's just like in America, it's become commercialized.
Yeah.
And that's fine. But these people, everybody has a grandpa who's like, oh, I was just out hunting. And if I didn't hunt, then we didn't eat.
Yeah.
That was him.
Yeah. That was totally him.
That's why he's so good.
Yeah. Well, that's why I also wanted to specifically bring this point up. Simo, his favorite animal to hunt, like one thing he really liked hunting, was fox. So think about the size of a fox. Anyone who's ever seen a fox in person, they're like a little bit bigger than a rabbit and smaller. Like they're like a smaller than a medium-sized dog. You know, they're not big animals.
They're almost cat-sized, but a little bit bigger.
Tiny bit bigger than a cat. That's a good, yeah.
Yeah.
Also, have you ever seen the way that a fox moves, Case?
Yeah, they're fucking nocturnal creatures that eat rats. You know how hard it is to catch a rat?
Yeah. So they have super fast reflexes. They move in this really erratic way where like they'll run really fast for a half second and then stop and then go really fast a little bit and then walk slowly and then jump around. Like it's the hardest target in the world to hit. It's so hard to shoot.
Describing somebody who's being stealthy or running away, you describe them as a fox.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
They're just hard to triangulate. So Simo at age 12 and 13 and probably even younger than that, he just liked to go out and hunt foxes and to experiment. He would try to see how far away he could be when he shot a fox. And in his memoirs and in his books, it is stated that he shot a fox from 400 meters away with iron sights.
Oh, damn.
400 meters away, a fox.
Jesus Christ.
That's so fucking far.
And I bet in Finland, are they usually color of snow?
Yes.
Okay, that's what I figured.
Yeah, they're
like hard whenever to you see. Think of a fox in America, you think of the orange fox.
Yeah.
And all that.
This would have blended in with its environment. Yeah, so Simo had to be able to see it from that far away.
Yeah, that's
and then
crazy.
Take aim and shoot it. As like a kid, by the way.
Dude, foxes are some of the best hunters.
Yeah, they really are. Yeah. And he had to shoot them because they would kill like his chickens and stuff they had on his farm.
Yeah. That's kind of like a known thing with like coyotes and stuff. They're always busting in.
And a lot of times coyotes, I've heard this, I don't know it by experience, but I've heard that coyotes, you know, they can only eat so many chickens, but if they bust into a coop, a lot of those chickens will die of like shock and have heart attacks because they're so scared.
Chickens definitely are dumb as fuck.
They are, yeah, they'll kill themselves.
Owned a couple chickens and they all were dumb as fuck.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
So, what have we learned? SEMO, born on a farm, hunted because he needed to, and he was really good at skiing.
Yeah.
Also, Finland is a country where, like, they teach you how to shoot rifles in school. It's one of those countries.
Yeah.
And I guess he just got, like, perfect grades on every time there was, like, shooting involved. He was just perfect at it. And then also, when he joined the military at 19, Case, you know about this. We both know about this. In the military, most militaries, there's, like, competitive shooting that's kind of encouraged.
Yeah.
And you can join, like, a team, and you can go and, like, shoot competition with your rifle, and you get medals for it.
And that's one of the best things to do if you join the military.
Yeah. Did you ever know anybody in the Marine Corps that was like just super good with their competitive stuff? Like they were on the Marine Corps shooting team.
I knew a couple guys who got the pistol.
Yeah.
And every time you would hear it, I wanted to bring this up, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
There's like this whole thing that the military teaches you how to shoot and all this stuff. And there's all these jokes about like when people get there, they'll be like, I don't care if you're like some farm guy who's really good at shooting or used to hunt with your dad and stuff. Like we're going to teach you how to really shoot.
Yeah.
And then all these stories of like the best shooters are always guys who just hunt it before and all this stuff.
Uh-huh.
Who actually use the gun in the situation. And then everybody I knew on the Marine Corps shooting team, they were all hunters and like had shot before the military.
Yeah.
So if you think you're going to join the military and learn how to shoot, probably not.
Yeah.
Probably going to learn basic weapon manipulation.
Well, I think it's just you learn a different skill set in like, I mean, for example, boot camp, like they just want to make sure that you can have a gun and not accidentally kill somebody. Like that's their primary goal. And then you get like when you go to like AIT.
Then they keep doing it. They keep killing people. Damn it.
Okay, so that was SEMO's like childhood, right?
Yeah.
Another thing I want to point out, it's less important to his like sniper career, but he was super shy. And so there's very few photos of him from his youth.
Yeah.
The only pictures you can really find of SEMO are ones that were like, basically he didn't know there was a camera there or like he had to have his picture taken for like his graduating class or like his boot camp photo or whatever, you know, like he just had to have his picture taken, but he was kind of camera shy and didn't like to talk to journalists.
He's out shooting fucking foxes.
He was a farm boy and wanted to be left alone. Yeah. And that, I think that another reason I can really look up to SEMO is that he just wanted to be left alone. And the only time he fought somebody in war is when they fucking invaded his country and were literally in his backyard. You know, he lives on the border with Russia. So when they invaded, the first territory they got to was his family farm.
Yeah.
So let's talk about his early military career, his compulsory service that only lasted about 8 months at age 19. So he joined the military because he had to, and he graduated his boot camp and all that stuff. And then he was on Finland's like competitive rifle shooting team for the army.
Uh-huh.
And he immediately took basically all their first place records. Like as a 19-year-old kid, he was out shooting everyone else in the Finnish military.
This kid might pay off in the coming days.
So one of the tests they give you for competitive shooting in the Finnish army of this era, 1925, they set a target at 150 meters. And they gave you a bunch of ammo for a Mosin Nagant and said, how many times can you hit this bullseye? The bullseye was about like, it's a circle that's like, say, 2 inches in diameter.
Yeah.
At 150 yards. First of all, 2 inch diameter, 150 yards. Holy fuck.
You would see like a dot.
You'd see a tiny little dot.
Yeah.
Simo Hayat was able to hit that target 19 times in a minute with a Mosin Nagant rifle.
In a minute?
In a minute.
Hitting it 19 times in 30 minutes would have been fine with me.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
So that what that tells me is not only because we already know he's accurate.
It's a 2 inch target at 150 with a Mosin Nagant.
Yes.
Jesus Christ.
We already know he's
accurate.
Wouldn't
it look like a dot, but it would be pretty close.
You'd be able to see where the dot was because it's a target and there's like crosshairs pointing to it. So you can see where it is. But that's such a hard shot with
his
iron
hole
sights.
Would be crazy.
This is with iron sights. There's no scopes. 1925.
Yeah, and it's a wooden rifle, so it would be heavy. It would give you fatigue.
Yeah.
Even in a minute. And then shooting 19.
He was shooting it crouched.
Yeah, that's insane.
Yeah. So that's, we already know he's accurate because he shot that fox. 19 minutes is so fast. For those who aren't aware, a Mosin Nagant, it's a bolt action rifle. So every time you shoot, you have to then take your eyes off the sights and then cycle the weapon manually and then get back on target.
So it'll punch you in the face.
It will punch you in the face. Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
Or, and oh, by the way, Mosin Nagant only holds 5 rounds. So every time he shot 5 rounds, he would then have to reload in this really awkward way with stripper clips.
So 4 times.
He had to reload three times. You start with a loaded rifle.
Oh, so you would have 6. So he'd have 18.
No. He had 5 rounds, shot 5, reloaded, you know. So 19 shots.
Yeah.
He reloaded 3 times.
Okay. It was already loaded. Okay. 5, 1, 2, 3. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yep. Damn.
Which, reloading a Mosin Nagant 3 times in a minute, that's impressive to me.
What was the record before? 3?
I wasn't able to find what the record was, but I know that he broke it, and it took someone like decades after him to be able to break that record.
Yeah.
And the guns got way better and stuff. Like, and they let him use scopes. Like, I don't know if anyone.
It's like one of those stories where it's like something so crazy happened, everybody still remembers it.
There's guys on YouTube that attempt to recreate it, and they can get close. Like, there's some guys on YouTube that I've seen get close to that. I've never seen anyone actually do it before.
Is this the left or the middle finger shooting?
The Mosin doesn't work that way. So you're referencing a Mad Minute.
Yeah.
That's for a Smelly rifle, the short magazine Lee Enfield SMLE. And that rifle you can hit the trigger with your middle finger.
Yeah.
Not really on the Mosin Nagant.
That makes it even more impressive that you can't even use that.
So on the Smelly, the bolt is downturned, like bent downward, so that you can hit it more easily, like you can run the bolt more easily.
Yeah.
On the Mosin, it is straight out the side. It's not bent at all.
Well, there's a reason the Mosin is one of the cheapest to buy even to this day.
Yeah, it's a really cheap gun, and it's not great. It's a
fucking barrel with wood around it.
But that even says more about Simo's shooting ability, that he was like a 19-year-old kid that was able to do this, right? And I want to point out, the training he got in the army was like normal infantry training, so he was learning how to like march and safely handle guns and stuff. But they're not teaching him how to be a sniper at this point.
Yeah. That's all from the being a marksmanship in the fucking Finnish military.
Yeah.
Like winning that.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So he used a model. It was produced in Sako, the Mosin Nagant, but it's a model 2830. And this was the rifle that was being used in the 1920s by the Finnish. And so later, when he rejoined the army to participate in the Winter War, he was able to keep his competition rifle, which was the M2830. But most of the other Finnish soldiers were using the M1891 or the M1891-30. So just to explain what the difference between these rifles are, these are all Mosin Nagants, but the 2830 is by far the best rifle. It's called the Spitz because of the way that the sights are shaped. It kind of looks like a Spitz dog's ears. And the other Mosin Nagants are more traditionally Soviet. They're just kind of the cheap Mosin Nagant rifles that are kind of garbagey, and the bolts are stiff and it's hard to load them, et cetera, et cetera. So Simo had the better rifle that was like a custom tailored thing for him, and more of an accurate sniper rifle, I would say, and less of an infantry rifle of the day. Because he was in the military in 1925 when he was 19, when he re-enlisted, he was able to specifically request that he keep his Model 2830. And I should also point out that Finland at this time was unique in that if you joined the military and then went to boot camp and all that stuff, when you got out to go back to your civilian job, you could keep the rifle that the military gave you. So Simo kept his M2830 and then was practicing with it on his own. So that's another reason he was so good with his rifle. It was his gun. He hunted with it even after he got out of the military. So between 1925 and 1939, he got out and went back to his family farm, but he was still practicing with this rifle. So he still was really good and knew what he was doing with his gun. With all that said, I want to point out, we talked about earlier, Simo got 505 confirmed kills, right? 305 of those, roughly, were with this 2830 rifle, and the other 200 were with the KP-31 Suomi submachine gun. We talked about this submachine gun in the past in previous episodes, but it's such a good submachine gun with a big drum magazine. Simo liked to have this gun with him at all times in case people got closer to him than he want. And then also he said it was really good for shooting at masses of people. Like if soldiers are marching in a column, he would just get in front of the column and just start shooting at the line of them. And usually they'd all fall over with this submachine gun.
God damn.
Yeah. He kind of had it down to a science of just how to hunt people. He got super good at it. So that's the rifle and equipment he used, that rifle and that submachine gun. Also, another thing I want to point out, Basically, every Finnish soldier in the Winter War was really good at using Molotov cocktails. And I know everybody knows what a Molotov cocktail is, but you might not know where they get their name. So the Soviet foreign ambassador of the 1930s and 40s was Vyacheslav Molotov. He was a guy, and basically he was just an ambassador to foreign governments. And Molotov had made some very interesting remarks about Finland in the months leading up to the Winter War. And so they named their firebomb after the Russian ambassador as like a way to mock the Russians that they were lighting on fire with this bomb.
I still call that to this. They,
yep, the Finns.
Isn't it gasoline?
There's a lot of different ways to make them, but the Finns would use like really high alcohol liquor and a little bit of petrol, which is gasoline.
Gasoline.
Yeah, yeah. So it's liquor mixed with gas in a glass bottle, and they would stuff a rag in it and then light the rag on fire on the outside and then throw that. And then when the glass broke, the petrol and the alcohol would mix, and then it would just all catch boom. On fire. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. The Finns used it specifically to destroy tanks because they didn't have any anti-tank weaponry at the time. So they would light tank engines on fire. Okay, so you ever lit a car on fire or seen a car on fire?
And I mean, back then, tanks weren't that good.
No, they weren't that good.
So fireworks real good.
Tanks weren't meant to be lit on fire.
Case, have you ever lit a car on fire? What the fuck?
Calling you out.
No. Jesus.
So SEMO also used Molotov cocktails as an anti-tank weapon. And remember how I said he was really good at skiing?
Yeah.
So the Soviet tanks of 1939 didn't turn that fast. They weren't faster than, say, a man skiing to this behind you with a Molotov cocktail. So you can also read stories about how SEMO would see a column. So it's a tank, and then behind the tank was a bunch of infantry. He would get to the side of them, shoot them all with his submachine gun, and then ski behind the tank and throw a Molotov cocktail in its engine.
By the way, Sean loves this guy. He's told me this story millions of times.
Yeah.
All of everything you're hearing right now. My funniest thing to think about every time we talk about this is the skiing part.
Yes.
So I just imagine it's like the fucking Winter Olympics and this guy's just like running down the hill while gunning them down with a machine gun and also Molotov cocktailing fucking tanks.
Yes.
Like probably literally what it looked like.
Probably so.
He had 500 kills in 90 days. He probably was going batshit crazy.
He was going crazy. I mentioned he was really good with the submachine gun and really good at skiing, you know?
He's really good at shooting people while doing it.
He was good at shooting while skiing.
Yeah.
There's comments made about him from, like, fellow soldiers and stuff, and it was like, SEMO had this innate ability to accurately shoot while moving.
Yeah.
Like, he could be jogging and shooting, and he would just hit everywhere he wanted to. It was, like, the same as laying down, is how they described it.
Some guys just love war.
He just was so good at it. And so he would be, like, skiing down a hill, and he would wait until he got a bunch of momentum and the recoil wouldn't slow him down. And then he would shoot at a column of infantry while he was skiing down a hill. And then, you know, his submachine is on a sling. So then he would put it away, light a Molotov cocktail when he lost his momentum, and then start skiing again, and then throw the Molotov cocktail at a tank. Like, this guy had it fucking figured out.
If everybody was like that, Finland would be known as, like, the scariest soldiers of all time.
They
only had one SEMU.
Yeah. So the Winter War starts, 1939, right? Yeah. SEMU rejoins the military, and he is known for his sniping prowess. And so they make him a sniper and assign him to like an infantry battalion. And he is the sniper of this group. I believe he was also a sergeant. And so he was technically like in control of other men, like a squad of men. But a lot of the times what he would do is go out on his own and start sniping. And then later, his kills were confirmed by his own word. And a lot of the times other soldiers would go out and recover equipment at night and confirm his
kills.
Reports. Yeah. So he would be like, he would leave at like, let's say 8 p.m. at night and then come back at 4 in the morning. And he was like, yeah, I killed 30 guys and they're around this lake. And then later, someone else would go out and scavenge their Mosin Nagants and all their ammo because they're all using the same gun in this war. And they'd be like, yeah, SEMO was right. Like, there's 30 dead guys around that lake.
Good war, by the way, to be both sides using the same gun.
Yes. The only difference, I didn't mention this earlier, the Spitz rifle that SEMO was using was shooting a 7.62 by 53R cartridge.
Mm-hmm.
The standard Mosin Nagant shoots a 7.62 by 54R cartridge.
Which, so is it one lower?
It's a tiny bit shorter of a cartridge. Now you might be thinking, oh, so he had his own unique ammo. Technically, But he could load 7.62 by 54R in his Mosin.
And it would fire?
Yeah.
It'd be fine.
It would be slightly less accurate.
But he liked the 53.
He liked the 53R cartridge because that was his competition rifle. That's what his M2830 shot. So the Winter War starts, and he likes to go out on his own. So let's talk about his tactics. I talked about it briefly with like him skiing and using a submachine gun. But like, what was his go-to strategy? So mainly what he would do is go out into the wilderness where there was like an obvious path for infantry or tanks to take, right?
Yeah.
I'll talk about this briefly, but the terrain of Finland makes it horrible for invading a country.
I'm guessing it's just mountains.
It's a lot of hills, lakes, and trees.
Yeah.
So
perfect for skiing.
There are roads in Finland, but not many of them are paved, at least at this time. I'm sure modern day Finland's very different. But at the time, they're like a lot of like dirt roads, and they all go through like very specific choke points. So like, let's say you're in between two lakes and maybe there's a hill in front of you. So now if you are in the middle of this field and you start getting shot at, there's nowhere to take cover. And then the reports of gunshots are echoing across those lakes, and it's really hard to triangulate where they're coming from.
Oh,
it's
okay.
Hard to hear where people are shooting you from.
So you don't even know where you're getting hit from.
Yeah.
And that's like a good fucking guy.
It's a sniper's wet dream.
Yeah.
There's nowhere to tell where you're getting shot from, and there's no cover to take. And you're in snow that's like shin deep. So you can't even run that fast.
Pop out, yeah.
You can't run that fast.
Just sit there and die.
You just got, I mean, that's what a lot of these Russian guys did. There's nowhere to go. So Simo would basically sit at one of these choke points and wait for like 10 hours at a time, just not moving. He would put food in his pockets and wear this camo suit, and I'll put it as a thumbnail, but it was this camo suit that was head to toe white with just these tiny little eye holes cut out. Thick winter gloves and winter clothes, but you can't see any of his skin, and he's wearing like just white suit. And so if he's sitting in snow, he's like invisible.
And it's pretty warm to sit in snow.
Yeah.
If you cover yourself with snow, it's actually
insulating.
Pretty warm.
Insulating,
you think
yeah.
You'd just be out there freezing. No, if you bury yourself in snow, it's actually really warm.
Yeah. And I mean, this is a guy, like we said, he's 34 living in Finland and in a rural part where there's not modern day luxuries like running water or toilets or anything. Yeah. Like, this guy lived out here. This was home. It was very natural for him to just like sit out there.
Yeah. It wasn't like your normal military where you're like getting missions, having to go back and like report and all that stuff. Like, he was probably just reporting to like some captain who was also in charge of all these other farmers who had become freedom fighters of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's also important to point out, like, as long as Simo was coming back being like, yeah, I killed another 20 guys today.
They don't give a fuck what he does.
Yeah. And like, he was already a well-known figure in the Finnish. Like, he was kind of already a celebrity before the Winter War. He was just known as like the best soldier. And then now that he's out here doing this, like, they used him in propaganda posters and they made music about him. Like, he's a hero at home, you know?
Whenever you have a normal war, wherever you send 16 people out and they're supposed to find the bad guy and kill somebody, but then they also have to fight through the whole war.
Yeah.
Of like finding out who's the actual bad guy. Nobody ever kills anybody, and it's kind of like boring, and people come home and say the war was boring.
Yeah.
Whenever you're defending your homeland and 160 people are coming towards your town,
yeah,
and all you have to do is hide and snipe them, you might be the greatest sniper of all time.
Of all time. I want to regurgitate some folklore about Simo, and I'll confirm what's true and what's not. So, what is true? The Russians found out about Simo Heia and were really afraid of him, understandably.
I heard they paid a lot of money.
Yeah, so there was bounties put on him and stuff like that. So here's what's true about that and what's not. The Russians did know specifically about Simo Heia, and they were really scared of him, and they kind of knew which paths he liked to sit on and then tried their best to avoid him. But like I was saying earlier, if you're in Finland, sometimes there's just nowhere else to go. And so what do? Like, just go at a different time? I mean, he's still sitting there. So they just did their best to avoid him, but he was, you know, he's a hunter. He did this his entire life, so he was waiting for him.
Yeah.
And there was bounties placed on him. What the truth of that is that there was a bounty on Simo Heia. However, there was bounties for every Finnish sniper.
Yeah.
If you killed a Finnish sniper and turned him in, the Soviet government promised you money. I really don't think...
I doubt the Soviets ever paid anybody anything ever.
That's what I was going to say. I'm like, I don't think they were actually...
You ever give a Russian money?
It's gone in a minute.
I mean, it's never coming back.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So I don't think that's 100% true. You also got to point out, like, a lot of the stuff about SEMO was propagated by the Finnish government at the time, and they had a vested interest to make this guy like a folk hero.
Yeah, so he is a hero.
There's a lot of stuff about him that was said that wasn't quite true. However, it's still an amazing story, and he's still the best marksman in history, in my opinion. But there are people that are like, well, he got 700 kills. And it's like, he might have. Yeah. We don't know. He could have.
Who's counting them all whenever you get up there?
When you kill 500 people, it gets hard to count.
And it also doesn't fucking matter anymore.
There's also a lot of times where SEMO said he shot people, and then he would go, I don't know if I killed 30, but I definitely shot 30 people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. There's probably a few people he shot, and then they managed to get away or something. Because that happens when you're a hunter. You shoot a deer, and it runs off wounded.
Out of 500, he's had to have left a couple.
We know that he has 505 confirmed kills, like dead bodies seen by other people.
Yeah, confirmed. So there's got to be at least 30 people who have been shot by him and crawled away.
Yeah, and maybe they died later and he never saw their body, or maybe they made it. We don't know.
Yeah.
So yeah, he might have killed 700 people, but it's kind of doesn't matter, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And then also, there's just like folklore about him that's just kind of a myth, and I won't propagate too much of that.
Guys, think about if your girl said that she slept with one man, mm-hmm. or 501. Clearly, it doesn't matter anymore. He's still a straight killer.
Yeah.
Just like your girlfriend, guys. She cheated on you.
That's true. That's what the point of today's episode is.
Yeah.
Okay. So, again, SEMO did all of this in about 90 days, right? And so he was going on these solo missions by himself where he would find like a sniper's perch in the hills, right? And then pack snow around himself so you could just kind of see the front of his face and his rifle. And then he would pack snow down in front of the muzzle of his rifle so that when his rifle went off, there wouldn't be this big muzzle blast and a cloud of snow would appear. Mm-hmm. So it was really hard to see where he was shooting from. Other things about SEMO that make him really interesting, he had access to, in the Winter War, telescopic sights.
Mm-hmm.
Like a scope that magnifies how far you can see and shoot by like 4 or 6 times. The Finnish military had them and were issuing them to snipers. SEMO didn't want one. Now, Case, why do you think that would be? Why would he refuse a scope?
Because he's fucking never used it and he's so good without it.
Bingo. Yeah. You're good with what you practice with. If you've ever met an old-timer, like a guy who's really good at shooting, and he's like, those red dots, I don't like them.
That was me today.
Was it you today?
Yeah, Sean was telling me to flip my magazines the other way so I could load better.
Yeah.
And I did it one time and it did work. But I'm just so not used to it, so it probably won't work for me, but it's still, I guess I just have to retrain the basics. I don't know.
You're good at what you practice with, and if you decide to switch some of your fundamental techniques, it takes a lot of work.
Yeah, but I could be the best sniper in Finland.
You could be the best sniper in Finland.
Not listening to you. I don't want your telescopic sights. I want to turn my Glock mags backwards.
So there's some thing on the internet where it's like SEMO didn't use scopes because the sunlight could reflect off of it and give away his position. I think that's true too. I think that is like he was trying to stay as hidden as possible and didn't want to give away his position. So I think that is one of the reasons he refused a scope. However, I think the bigger thing is that he just practiced without a scope his entire life. So why would he suddenly change what he's doing?
Yeah, I would never change to a telescopic scope.
Also, remember,
like, who knows how good they are compared to me dinging a target 19 times in 1 minute
from 150 meters?
Yeah, what the
glad
fuck?
You brought that up. So here's the other thing. According to a book I read called White Death, it's written by a Finnish historian. I read a few books for this episode, people. SEMO had another strange innate ability that kind of makes him just a weird one-off guy. He could estimate how far away things were.
Yeah.
He was really good at it.
Taken so many shots, you'll get good at it too.
Exactly, you know? He was estimated at being able to estimate distance within 1 meter, like he could accurately guess how far away things were,
mm-hmm.
with a range of 1 meter, out to 150 meters.
That's pretty fucking good.
That's pretty fucking good. If you set an apple on a tree 120 meters away, SEMO would be like, yeah, it's like 119 to 121 meters away. Like, he'd be able to do that. That's crazy that he's that good. Also, because he had that power, that like ability, he would go to these paths where he thought Russian columns might appear, and he would sit 150 meters away from them. You know why he did that?
Because that was far enough that he knew what to do.
All his competitive shooting was done from that distance.
And that was far enough for them to be scared and not be able to find him.
Yep, it was the perfect distance for him. And remember, I was talking about like the Soviets, they modified their rifle sights where they came out of the factory zeroed at 150 meters.
Ooh, wonder why.
So he never adjusted the sights of his rifle. He would just guess how far away things were accurately and then change the way he was holding his sights. He never adjusted his sights. That's another reason he didn't use a scope.
I mean, irons are gonna stay.
Irons are going to stay where they're going to stay.
Yeah.
Also, it's 1930s and early 1940, so scope technology was not as good as it is now, and like your scope would get foggy in the cold, and like there was just problems that had like scope mounts weren't that good.
Yeah.
So like if you shot a gun that had a lot of recoil, like let's say a bolt action rifle in 7.62 by 54, could shake your zero out of place. Like there's a lot of things that can go wrong, you know? So he just stuck with
Dude,
irons.
if we got fucking Somo, a motherfucking vortex,
SEMO.
Somo,
Sumo.
if we got him a vortex optic now,
Oh, he'd
dude,
be crazy good.
yeah. But he probably wouldn't want it.
Probably not. He'd
And he'd
probably stick
make
with
us look like
designs.
idiots. He'd be like,
Yeah.
all you need is the irons.
Yep. Okay, so we know SEMO's like a badass. He blew up tanks with Molotov cocktails. He killed hundreds of enemy soldiers in 90 days with his bolt action rifle and his submachine gun. And for the most part, he did it alone, right?
Yeah.
There were a few times where he would lead his squad of men into a sniper's perch and like teach other people how to do it, but the majority of his like really big days where he would kill like 20 or 30 people were done by himself,
Yeah.
which crazy. So let's what happened to SEMO, right? Because this war was 90 days. What did he do at the end of the war? Well, the Winter War as a whole, we talked a lot about SEMO, but as a whole, it really wasn't going well for the Finns because they're a country that's really tiny trying to fight the Soviets, and the Finnish armory. They all the tanks and planes they had were basically borrowed from other countries.
Yeah.
Finland didn't produce any tanks or any planes that were meant for warfare at this time. And they're fighting a modern military in the Soviet Union who has like a lot of tanks and a lot of bombers and fighter craft. There was just, it doesn't matter how good of a soldier you are, if you're outnumbered 10 to 1 and they have tanks and planes, it's really hard to win a conventional war. Like really hard. So the Soviets had a kill death ratio of about 1 to 20.
Jesus.
For every Finnish soldier they killed, they lost about 20 men, and then they captured about 1/8 of Finland, and then they sued for peace.
Sued.
They said,
Let's bring the lawyers into this.
and I won't get into the politics of the Winter War, but basically the Finnish government knew that they couldn't fight for much longer. They were running out of adult men to fight this war, and they were running out of ammo. And instead of fighting to the bitter end with children and women, they're just like, yeah, you can have 1/8 of our country.
Yeah.
Stop fighting us.
Do they still have it?
Nope, they gave it back at the end of World War II.
Good.
So the Finnish lost the war technically,
Yeah.
and then the Soviets gained a bunch of land, which included SEMO's home farm, which is
Yeah.
kind of sad. However, Molotov, that ambassador I was talking about earlier,
Yeah.
he's quoted as saying at the end of the Winter War, he's like, "We've won just about enough land to bury our dead."
Yeah.
Because hundreds of thousands of Russians died in this war to capture an eighth of Finnish farmland. Like it was for nothing. There
Yeah.
was nothing of value gained in this.
So they fucked them up.
The Finnish military fucked up Russia. So if you look on Wikipedia, it says that Finland lost this war. I'm like, eh, a little.
Yeah.
They sued for peace and gave up territory,
The
but I
one
mean,
time Soviets lose, though, that's
yeah.
good.
And it embarrassed the Soviet military to a degree. This really impacted Hitler's decision to invade the Soviet Union a year later.
Oh, and then they fucked them.
Because the Soviets learned from the Finnish.
Yeah, they were like, just sit around and wait for them.
But then also in the Battle of Berlin, one of the things they did was they would dress up in white camouflage, get skis, and then their PPSH submachine guns, and ski behind the Germans in the Battle of Berlin.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons they won that battle is because they were using Finnish tactics to defend their
Snow just
capital.
slows you down so much, and as soon as you're skiing, you feel like the man.
Yeah, you're like, whoa, this is way faster.
Yeah, you're like, dude, why didn't we think of this before? And then
Yeah.
you're just gunning down Germans.
Yep.
Gunning down Soviets.
So let's talk about SEMO. On about 2 weeks before the war ended, SEMO was in an intense battle, and it was him and a lot of other Finnish soldiers in basically a trench. And SEMO was like, I'm going to go on this hill over here and start sniping their commanders so that they will retreat.
Yeah.
And so he left his own men and then went into like a sniper's perch and started shooting command, like enemy officers, like what he believed to be officers. Mm-hmm. And then a bunch of Soviet tanks began to like come over the horizon. And the way that it was written in this book I read, it was like there were so many tanks that you couldn't count them. And the Finns had no anti-tank weaponry other than they like dug some trenches that they hoped the tanks would get stuck in. Yeah. And they had a handful of Molotov cocktails left. But it was like there was more tanks than they had bullets. That's how many there were. And so Simo, thinking on his feet, began to shoot at the tank drivers through the eye slits of the tanks. And he stopped about four tanks that way by killing their drivers until a Soviet counter sniper returned fire on Simo's position and shot him in the cheek with an exploding bullet.
Now, the Simo story in here.
Simo survived his injuries. He was put into a medical coma because they believed he was dead. He was so heavily injured that they put him into a pile of dead bodies, and then someone saw his fingers twitching, and they pulled him out and put him into a medical coma, and then surgeons worked tirelessly on him for like days on end. And they were able to save his life, and he woke up from his coma, but his face was horribly disfigured. He had a horrible wound. He was shot in the cheek with an exploding round, and somehow didn't have any brain damage, but he was fucked up.
And didn't they already lose the war, technically, by the time he woke up?
The day that the peace treaty was signed.
Yeah.
From his coma.
So he missed the bad parts, too.
He missed the last days of the war, but was fighting in the thickest of it, you know? Yeah. So he woke up from his coma, horribly disfigured, and was able to recover from his wounds to a degree, and then got plastic surgery for the rest of his life to try to make his face look somewhat normal again. And if you look at pictures of Simo as an old man,
he looks pretty good.
He looked pretty good. Like, yeah. He got a bunch of surgeries on his face, but someone shot his jaw off with a sniper, exploding sniper rifle bullet, and he lived.
And he still looks like a guy.
He still looks like a fucking champ.
Yeah, he doesn't look that bad for the injury.
So, do you know what year the Soviet Union collapsed? Like, the Soviet Union government collapsed and became Russia again? Do you know what year that happened?
No.
1991. You know when Simo Hayat died?
2002. Ooh, he beat him.
He outlived the Soviet Union.
Oh, shit.
So he fucking won that war.
He outlived the towers.
Yeah, he did outlive the World Trade Center.
Yeah.
Simo Hayat lived from...
See America come back.
Simo lived from 1905 to 2002. He lived a full life. After he was injured in the Winter War, he went back to his family farm, which was part of the Soviet Union, right? And he helped his family move all of his stuff back to Finland. They bought a new farm. And he was actually awarded a bunch of medals, and the government helped pay for a new home for him and his family because he was like such a hero to the war.
Such a hero.
Yeah.
You have like the super, super Medal of Honor here.
Yeah. So here's another interesting little tidbit about that. Simo was injured, right? And then put into that pile of dead bodies. We believe that his rifle was captured by the Soviets.
So he doesn't have
it. We don't have the rifle, and no one knows where it is. We do know the serial number for it. It's in the 60,000s. I don't have it in front of me, but it's like rifle number 60,000 and something.
They remembered it too?
Yeah.
So we're just waiting for it to pop up.
No one knows where it is, but it maybe it got destroyed. Maybe it's in Russia somewhere. We don't know.
I bet it'll show up one day.
Maybe. You can see a replica of his rifle because they made another one with his same serial number and gave it to him.
Yeah.
It's in a museum now. But he would still go hunting with it.
You're telling me they just made another serial number?
So there's technically two of them, but yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. I'm going to be calling somebody about that. I don't give a fuck how many people he killed in the war. The ATF. You can't break the law, buddy.
The ATF has joined the chat.
Yeah. You're done, kid.
Luckily, this is in Europe, and they don't really care about that.
They really don't. They're just we hate guns except for whenever we win the wars.
Yep, that's exactly right.
Here, we'll just print more.
So, Simo lived the rest of his life on his family's new farm, and he became a dog breeder, and so he really liked his Finnish wolfhounds, and he really liked hunting.
Oh, yeah.
And he would, every time a new prime minister was elected to Finland, he would go hunting with them. Like, that's how famous he was. Like, during the inauguration, it was kind of just tradition. Like, hey, now that you're the Prime Minister of Finland, how about you go hunting with Simo Hayat, the famous sniper?
Yeah.
And they would go hunt foxes together.
That was a question I wanted to know. I was like, there's no way this guy's, like, the most known sniper of all time. Is this famous? Survived all this stuff. Is he, like, a celebrity there?
He was, yeah.
Yeah. But so, you said he was shy. So, like, is he avoiding everybody? Or is there, like, interviews you can go watch?
He was shy. And I'm glad you brought this up. So, he kept like a journal, like he would write down like his own autobiography and memoirs and stuff.
Yeah.
But it was never published by him. He never wanted his like story to be out there. He was like, that's my life. It's private.
Yeah.
And so we don't know a whole lot about like his day to day stuff and like, you know, about his wife, his kids. Like, we don't know about a lot about that stuff.
Probably hated him.
Maybe, guaranteed. Maybe.
Fuck those kids. I was in the war.
But there was obviously a lot of books written about him, and he would every once in a while get interviewed, right?
Yeah.
And I read a few books on him that were not written by him, but by historians that knew a lot about him and like met him and stuff. But then when he died, people found his journal and his memoirs and then would use that as like primary sources to write about him.
Yeah, I mean, so, he wrote it too.
Yeah, and it's direct from his mouth. And he said that he was often asked like pretty insensitive questions. Like if you think about like the 1950s and 60s.
How does it feel?
Yeah. So there was a famous quote from SEMO, and this is real. It's on the internet and people like will debate who it came from, but it's from SEMO. A journalist asked him, what did you feel when you killed those Russian soldiers? And his response?
The recoil.
Recoil.
Yeah.
And now you could look at that and be like, oh, SEMO is like an unfeeling monster. I think he was annoyed with this journalist.
Yeah, but also that was like, that's turned into a meme now.
It is now. Yeah,
when people talk about guns, all I felt was a recoil.
Yep.
What do you think went through my daughter's head when she was shot? A bullet.
A bullet, yeah.
Type of like shit like that. It's like a whole meme.
He was asked that question in a more polite way much later in his life in like the 1980s.
Yeah.
And they were like, do you ever have any trauma or like have any regrets from your time? And his response was much more genuine, I think. And it was basically like, I was just a soldier doing what I had to do, and if they didn't like it, they didn't have to be on my property.
Yeah.
He was like, they could have left, and I would stop shooting.
Yeah.
And that, yeah, hard to argue with that. Someone invades your country.
I bet he was just fucking chilling at his residence and killed 500 people, basically.
Yeah, probably.
He's just like, I'm not leaving.
The areas that he was taking these shots were so close to where he grew up.
Yeah.
Like, he could have walked there. That's how close it was.
What I'm saying. It wasn't like a war of, like, you get sent to another country and go fight people. It was a war of defending your homeland.
Yeah.
And they came to you. So it's definitely going to be like so many bodies. If they just keep sending people, which we know the Soviet does.
Yeah.
Like they were fucked.
People after people. Another thing I didn't mention this. It's in like every YouTube video about SEMO and stuff. So I didn't really want to mention a ton of that stuff. But this war lasted 3 months-ish, right?
Yeah.
And the Soviets invaded wearing their normal uniform, which was green camouflage. And it's winter, and there's snow fucking everywhere.
So they just snuck out.
They just stuck out like a sore thumb.
Oh, I hate shooting the trees that move. That's what he thought the whole time.
So they were super easy to shoot at, but
I shot 50 trees that moved today.
SEMO died of natural causes in his sleep in 2002.
What do you think his most kills in one day was?
It's actually documented. He killed 31 people in one day.
Yeah. You're saying he had a couple days where he killed 30 people.
Yeah.
And I was trying to do the math of 90 divided by 500.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, that sounds about right, but he had to just have a really good day. And 31 is crazy.
Yeah, I mean, that's like the Reaper, Nick Irving, who's an American sniper from the Global War on Terror. Yeah. I think his confirmed kills are like 33.
So in one day, this guy killed everybody.
That Nick Irving the Reaper did.
Yeah.
And Nick Irving, if you don't know, he's like an extremely talented. He's like
the
talented,
most known sniper in the world.
Maybe except for like now. Chris Kyle.
But yeah, that's because Chris Kyle died. I think the Reaper's better.
I think the Reaper's a better marksman. So that becomes a question. Like, what makes you a better sniper? Is it killing more people? Or is it like the shots you took and how good you were?
Yeah, I think Chris Kyle was known as a guy who would save lots of lives because people were about to get like shot from above. And
yeah.
He was in the Battle of Fallujah. So yeah. He was protecting guys, kicking door to door.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure what makes you famous as a sniper is if you were about to die and somebody killed somebody and you have no idea who it was and then you learned it was a sniper miles away.
Yeah.
Immediately you would think that's the best sniper. So that's probably why Chris Kyle's the most known.
He also, Chris Kyle, using modern technology with like electronic scopes and rangefinders, was shooting people from like 2,000 yards away.
Yeah.
Like really, really far away. SEMO Heyaha never made a shot like that because he's using iron sights, and the Russians he's shooting at, he didn't need to be farther away than what he was. They weren't returning fire.
They just like came to him and like were fighting him the whole time.
So he's not making these crazy long shots that you think of a sniper making,
mm-hmm.
but he's definitely doing the job well.
He's getting distance, but not enough.
Also,
stop rifles.
It's so hard to compare a modern sniper to SEMO because, like, modern snipers don't ski behind tanks and throw, like, homemade firebombs in their engines.
Sounds like he was just, like, the best fit for the land he grew up in to fight back. By the way, skiing behind a tank and throwing a Molotov cocktail into it, when you're thinking of this, just remember he's 34.
Yes.
Yep. So his bones might have been hurting when he did this
He's sore.
He was like, oh.
He woke up and went,
I'm sure he was fucking sore as shit.
Probably.
What about the snow thing? I like the snow thing. You told me about that. Oh, yeah.
Okay, so he took a lot of measures to make sure he wasn't spotted in his sniper's perch, right?
Mm-hmm.
Another thing he liked to do was he would put handfuls of snow in his mouth, and so that when he exhaled through his mouth, you wouldn't see a big puff of his breath. Like, it wouldn't be...
So it'd be cooled down.
Yeah, and it would soak up all the moisture from his breathing. And so when he was lying still and breathing normally, there you couldn't see his breath because he had snow in his mouth.
Yep. Hell yeah. Like, he just thought of everything. He knew.
He'd just been doing it so long.
Yeah. Also, you couldn't get the reflection from a scope. Probably would have helped a lot.
Yep.
If, like, he had a scope and it reflected, like, he would have been caught so much quicker.
Another thing, SEMO, you know, these Mosin Nagant bolt-action rifles are pretty big. Like, they've got, like, big 20-inch barrels on them, you know, maybe 24 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
SEMO was 5'3".
He was 5'3"?
He was 5'3".
Why didn't we start the podcast with that? Short king.
SEMO was a short king.
Holy fuck, he was a midget almost.
He was a little guy.
Short king. Now, short king.
You might be thinking, people in 1940 were a little bit shorter. Yeah, a little. Not 5'3". And also Finland, it's one of those Nordic countries where people were fucking huge. Like,
dude.
People in Finland in 1939 were like 5'11", 6 feet normally. SEMO is this little guy.
Runt of the litter, fucking absolutely living up to the name.
Yeah, he's like a rattling sniper from Warhammer.
Yeah,
like,
dude, he's fucking him up.
Yeah.
So, Warhammer?
Yeah.
God damn it, Sean.
I brought up Warhammer in this.
Yeah, you almost made a whole pod. Without you got your ass.
They did. So what questions do you have about SEMO? Because that's his story, front to back. Okay.
So first off, everybody knows the submachine gun thing is like what everybody brings up all the time. Like, oh yeah, he did get 500 kills, but 200 of them were with his submachine gun. I mean, is that a big deal to you?
It's harder to shoot people with a submachine
gun. That's what I say. These people act like he was just fucking in goddamn, he was on Nuketown 24/7. No, he was so far away. He used it in such a good way. So it's so dumb. What questions do I have?
Yeah.
I knew, like, most of the stuff I knew because of you.
Yeah.
But the fact that he did irons the whole time was awesome.
Yeah.
The fact that he probably had the best submachine gun of all time. The skiing was amazing.
Yep.
The skiing, like, I don't know. It's just skiing and hiking. Like, I'm sure hiking is way more of a big deal than this.
In the snow, yeah.
Because that's just like the military background of being like getting up those hills to ski down for 2 seconds.
Yeah.
Getting up those hills would be so hard. So this guy was fit as fuck.
It had to have been. Yeah.
5'3", hiking up these mountains to ski down to just gun down a line of Soviets.
Carrying
crazy.
Two guns that were about as big as him.
Yeah. Like, he was just the dog.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Every time you hear about these snipers and stuff, like, everybody thinks snipers are so cool, and they are. But then, like, the more you learn about him, it sounds like it would be so boring and all this stuff. And this guy's, like, the opposite. Like, yeah. It doesn't seem like he was just sitting around and pissing himself while sniping because he's so good and, like, didn't want to move. He wanted to always have that fucking eye on the reticle type shit. It sounds like he was just getting up and skiing down the hill and fucking Molotov cocktailing everybody.
Yeah.
Gunning them down. Like, he was so cool.
Yeah.
And, I don't know. People will hear the number 500 and just not think it's, like, that crazy, because, I mean, 500 people is
so many.
He took out, like, a generation of Soviet men.
He did. And then, like, think about, like, just the military impact that removing 500 soldiers from the board. Like, it's just, it's almost
one man.
One guy.
One to 500 would be crazy.
Oh, the other thing I wanted, I forgot to mention this, but we talked about, like, the Soviets putting bounties on people's heads, and it's like, yeah, that's kind of true, but not really, you know?
Yeah.
One thing that was true is that the Soviets sent counter snipers into the area where SEMO was
to find him,
and SEMO single-handedly killed all of them.
Yeah.
The number that you see on the internet is 20. It's debated on. Like, maybe it was 18, maybe it was 22, But over the course of 3 months, the Soviets would send counter snipers to go and find him and snipe him.
20 in 3 months is crazy. And that's like one every 3 days.
He killed every single one of them. And it got so bad that the Soviet government wanted him so bad that they began to just bomb the forests that they thought he was in.
Yeah.
Like they would think there could be a sniper in this forest, so let's just use artillery and blow it all up.
Yeah. They probably did the avalanche thing too.
Yep.
Which is like, you shoot, by the way, that's still the way they clear avalanches to this day, which is super cool.
It's explosive.
But you take a artillery gun and you shoot it at the sides of mountains where you think an avalanche is going to happen. It causes it to happen.
Yeah.
And, I mean, an avalanche hitting you whenever you're just trying to snipe people would be crazy. So clearly he was just that good.
Yep.
But they had, and so much of this stuff would cause an avalanche. All that stuff would kill him instantly.
Yeah.
He just knew the land and was so smart and
prepared. Yeah. You guys probably heard some polka music at the beginning of this episode, you know? I want to point, this is less specific to SEMO and more just about the Winter War in general, but record players were a big deal at this time, you know? The Finns, to psychologically deter the Russians from invading their land and killing more of them, they would play
polka
music from record players in front of the lakes. And they would carry, the sound would carry over these like long lakes and it would echo. And the Russians could hear it during the day and during night when they were like about to make an assault in the morning. They would hear Finnish polka music. And it was basically to tell them like, hey, we know where you're at and we're waiting for you. So come over here. Come invade our country.
And guess who's with us?
SEMO. All right, Casey. You have any other topics you want to talk about? Because that's all I got for SEMO.
I feel like, I don't know. I feel like we should include these in another one because I just want to do like a SEMO one.
Okay.
He's pretty important and like his story, like the way you guys are going to hear this is like it doesn't seem that action-packed or anything like that. There's no way to make a sniper story action-packed or anything like that. He literally was skiing down a hill and shooting people with a submachine gun and people are still complaining that it's not the fucking American sniper story.
Yeah. We don't really...
He's literally an action hero. You can't show it. They didn't make a movie about this guy. He's the real guy who did it. And, like, there's never going to be anybody like that ever again.
Even for our Paul Harrell episode, like, because it's hard to make an episode, like, of Squidward that's just about one guy. In our Paul episode, we talked about him for, like, I don't know, half an hour or whatever.
Yeah.
Paul's a fantastic guy. We love Paul. But, like, SEMO is a guy you can talk about for an hour or two.
Yeah.
Just exclusively.
And, like, when you read the stories, it's always going to be better. But, I mean...
Yeah.
Like, it's not exaggerating or anything. It's just, like, killing people was crazy. All he did was he would go sit and hide, and he would just kill people endlessly, which is so cool.
Yeah.
But it's not going to impress some people. Yep. And it should. It's crazy that people had the drive to do that.
Yep. It's... Yeah, there's a lot of really cool things about him, and I don't know. It's just one of those stories that doesn't even sound real until you really research and go, oh my God, this guy is.
It could have just been a boring story wherever he killed 500 people, wherever he just hides in the snow and is really good at hiding. No, he's fucking somersaulting down the goddamn hill on his skis with his fucking machine gun. One of the most famous explosives of all time, the Molotov cocktail, is literally named after
this conflict he was in.
This conflict he's in with this ambassador and all this stuff. Like, it's crazy. So, it's like, he's probably the most decorated man of all time to kill people.
Yeah, I mean, short of, like, I mean, there's, like, a lot of,
Dan
like...
Dan Daly.
Yeah, there's certain other people that were decorated because, like, they saved a lot of people.
Yeah.
And, I mean, SEMO Heia is just, I mean, he's
his country.
He saved his country, defended his land, but he's just the Grim Reaper. Like, he just...
Yeah.
No one was better than him.
He just stacked him up.
So last, we can end on this, but what modern lessons can we take from SEMO? Because he was doing a lot of this in 1939 and 1940, which is like 80 years ago. So like, why should we care that he was so good? Like what, shooters and marksmen, what lessons can we take?
First off,
yeah,
I think being young and like learn to shoot and all that stuff obviously is easy to say like that's important to learn. I think what's important to learn is how dumb the Soviets were and how dumb warfare is. This guy was a guy who's, they kind of just like kept him home and he wanted to defend his homeland.
Yeah.
And they came right to him and they just like lined up in a line and got shot.
Yep.
Like, and it's amazing that we went and did the Iraq and Afghanistan things and that didn't happen to us.
Yeah.
It kind of did, but not as bad. Yeah. I'm just saying, like, it was a big thing where we're like...
Ended the same way, kind of, you know?
Yeah, like, but, like, the numbers are so much more in our favor compared for sure. to this.
Yeah.
But, like, obviously, if you go somewhere else and they know everything about it, and it's also a point of, like, the military of Finland backed this guy up.
Yeah.
Like, they just kind of were like, you go do what you do because you're killing the fuck out of everybody, and they helped him.
Yeah.
And it paid off in the end.
Yep. They trained their soldiers well, and they focused on, like, really practical stuff, like them sighting their rifles in for 150 meters because mm-hmm. they knew that that's, like, a good combat distance.
Mm-hmm.
That's really, like, modern. The U.S. military could learn from that, I think. Yeah. Like, designing stuff that's actually
practical. I think we did learn from this event, but I'm just saying, like...
For sure.
The way it is, like, just the military tries to be something it's not, where it's trying to, like... teach everybody how to do everything all the time and all that stuff. And sometimes you just let some guy go crazy.
Yep.
The most famous sniper of all time. He got lucky. And that's what you need.
And train with your guns. Because this guy trained. You think this guy just trained at like boot camp? And
No,
he trained at home. He went hunting all the time.
He already knew everything.
He's a master of his craft. So train with your guns. Be a good marksman. Think about practicalities of things. Get experience and get good with your rifle. Be like SEMO.
Uh-huh. All right. SEMO.
Be SEMO. Squibload Podcast, guys.
God damn!
We'll see you guys next week.
The White Death. Stay on sight and cover your head. When he pulls the trigger, you're dead.